This podcast is brought to you by Recontract, the leading software to automate your reconditioning process and streamline your entire used vehicle management process. Visit recontract.com to learn more. That's recontract.com.
Want to dive deeper into the topics you hear about on Daily Drive? We're offering listeners a special offer, 20% off a one-year Automotive News digital subscription. That gets you access to all of our news, information, and analysis made for automotive industry leaders like you. Go to autonews.com/dailydrivepromo to redeem. Welcome to Daily Drive for Wednesday, April 10th, 2024. I'm Jamie Butters, executive editor of Automotive News here in Detroit.
And I'm Kellen Walker in Las Vegas. Today on the show, GM creates a new position to help rethink its marketing. A graphite maker plans a new factory in Nevada to supply 100,000 EVs per year, and suppliers urge automakers to standardize their sustainability efforts. Plus, auto design journalist Laura Burstein joins the show to talk about Buick's new look and how electrification is changing car and truck design.
Certain things had to go in certain places, right? So we're conditioned to think that a long hood or a long dash to axle is beautiful. Well, a lot of that comes from because you just had a really big engine and you needed a place to put it. Yeah. What BEVs have done is completely turn that on its head.
Let's run through all the news you need to know to keep up in the auto industry.
General Motors has created a chief transformation officer role as the automaker continues an extensive review of its marketing and agency approach under new global CMO Norm DeGreve. Effective May 1st, longtime GM executive Molly Peck will take on the role. She has served as CMO for global Buick and GMC since 2021. She most recently oversaw a marketing overhaul for Buick, including a new tagline, "Exceptional by Design." Peck's replacement at Buick and GMC is Susie Guzzo, currently CMO for the Africa and Middle East regions. According to an internal GM memo, Peck will report to DeGreve and focus on, quote, building stronger brands, driving growth, and enterprise business results. Peck's promotion into the newly created role comes as DeGreve oversees a potentially major shift in GM's agency approach. The company is conducting an agency review for its customer relationship management business while also evaluating its media operations and creative agencies.
Malaysian graphite producer GraphJet Technology plans to build a plant in Nevada. It says it will be capable of turning agricultural waste into enough of the critical material to supply 100,000 electric vehicles per year. The company expects the factory to open in 2026. It will use materials recycled from as much as 30,000 metric tons of palm kernel sourced from Malaysia to produce up to 10,000 metric tons of artificial graphite. The investment comes as EV battery manufacturers and automakers race to secure new supplies of graphite as companies roll out new electric models. The auto companies are attempting to secure enough U.S. supply to meet Inflation Reduction Act requirements for EV incentives.
A new survey finds more than 80% of automakers and tier one suppliers are making requests of their suppliers on sustainability, but standards vary from company to company. That's why one industry trade group is pushing for sustainability standards to avoid confusion and inefficiencies. John Shalafo is Chief Sustainability Officer for MEMA, which represents more than 1,000 companies in the auto supply chain.
We know that the industry can develop standards. It's an opportunity to get players in the room and say, we've done this before on quality. Let's do this in this sustainability reporting area.
For years, suppliers of all sizes have singled out a lack of standardization as a significant issue when it comes to achieving industry climate goals. But smaller suppliers with smaller staffs face a harder time sorting through different customer requirements. MEMA found that 53% of suppliers said they do not have a dedicated sustainability manager. The group estimates that sustainability reporting and compliance demands the equivalent of 4.5 full-time staff.
And automakers fear White House opposition to a plan by Nippon Steel to acquire U.S. Steel. Japan's largest steelmaker is moving forward on its nearly $15 billion deal to buy the company. Auto companies are concerned about what might happen if the deal falls apart. A an earlier acquisition attempt by competitor Cleveland Cliffs fell apart in August, but U.S. Steel's CEO has indicated he would consider another bid if the Nippon deal collapses. The Alliance for Automotive Innovation is a trade group that represents automakers and suppliers. It wrote a letter to President Joe Biden's economic officer last month, urging the administration to prohibit a Cleveland-Cliffs takeover if the Nippon Steel deal were to fall apart. The group argues a Cleveland-Cliffs deal would lead to anti-competitive steel prices for the U.S. automotive industry. And those are today's headlines. Jamie, GraphJet Technology plans to build a plant here in Nevada. How big of a boost will this be for battery manufacturers to secure graphite? And do we know any battery companies that may have an exclusive deal with GraphJet?
Haven't heard. You know, sometimes these investments get announced and we know, you know, GM sometimes is an investor and is already sort of in line to receive the output. I haven't seen anything on that in this deal, but you know, this plant is going to be made out in Nevada where you live. I mean, I grew up in Iowa and agricultural waste is a serious thing. It's a lot that gets thrown off in the making of food for the world. So if we can turn that waste into something to make batteries, that's a great step for the industry.
Absolutely. Coming up, auto design journalist Laura Burstein joins the show to talk about how automakers are literally reshaping their vehicles in the electrification age. That's next on Daily Drive.
The EPA has finalized its tailpipe emissions rule. The agency now projects that battery electric vehicles will account for 30 to 56% of new light-duty vehicle sales in the 2030 to 2032 model years. We want to hear from you.
What do you think of the new rule? How will it affect your business? Send us a voicemail, text, or email. You might hear your comment on this week's Weekend Drive episode. Here's how you can get in touch.
Call us and leave a voicemail or text us at 313-444-2774. Again, that's 313-444-2774. You can also record your voice on your smartphone and send it to dailydrive@autonews.com. That's dailydrive, one word, at autonews.com.
And tune in to our Weekend Drive episode, available Saturday morning.
Managing your used inventory is not exclusive to one person or one part of the dealership. What does the communication look like between sales and service? Are your vehicles getting passed from trade-in to recon with no hiccups? What is your average cycle time to get a used car frontline ready? There is a lot to keep track of all at once. Right now, you could be experiencing three major issues with your recon information causing process breakdowns. One, lack of visibility into recon pricing to inform the appraisal process. Two, no access to that appraisal information when working through recon approvals. Three, missed information and process bottlenecks trying to manage a vehicle across multiple systems and tools. Full insight throughout your entire process is crucial to making your used car department the most efficient and profitable it can be. Recontract combined with AutoVision creates an end-to-end tool for your used car department to address these breakdowns. With access to live appraisal information and reconditioning approvals, you get a single view of every vehicle with all the data you need right in one place. Make more educated decisions on your used car inventory faster with all your data easily accessible at any stage. Visit info.recontract.com/autovision for more information. That's info.recontract.com/autovision.
Welcome back to Daily Drive. I'm Jamie Butters with Kellen Walker. The EV era is opening up all kinds of design possibilities for automakers. For vehicles on a flat, skateboard-style platform, designers can put just about anything on top of it. As we mentioned earlier in the show, Buick is operating under a new tagline, Exceptional by Design, and that will come with a reshaped lineup as well. Laura Burstein is an auto design journalist. She joins me now here at the Automotive News headquarters in Detroit to talk about all of it. Laura Burstein, welcome to Daily Drive. So great to have you here.
It's great to be here, Jamie.
You're in Detroit, not something that happens every day. You were here to visit with GM, and it kind of was a flashback moment for you, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. So about 5 years ago, I was invited to the old GM design studio at the Technical Center in Warren. And at the time, they were about to reveal a whole new brand identity. So I was invited with a few journalists to see a concept car, or I should say an inspiration car that they had made. And this was an orange car. It was a clay model. And at the time when they unveiled it, it was quite breathtaking and quite groundbreaking. And along with that visit with the car, they were talking about the fact that they knew that Buick needed to change. So they had been working together with their design team to come up with this new brand identity. So along with that, it was not just the car, but it was also the redesign of the logo, taking the logo from how it looked over the years with the circle around it and breaking out the tri-shield into three standalone units and things like this.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but yeah. I mean, you're talking about 5 years ago. I mean, this is the logo we just are seeing now, that's just coming to market now.
And as we know, I mean, development cycles, as actually I know from the Automotive News product pipeline, future product pipeline, so thanks for that. It often, it takes a long time from the time that a car gets imagined and until we see it at an auto show or on the road. And of course, there was a pandemic in there, which didn't help. But at this time, what we called the orange car was based off a sketch that one of the designers at Buick GMC Design, their department works together. They're typically both Buick and GMC designers. Mm-hmm. And to the credit of design leadership, Helen Emsley, who was actually the head of Buick GMC Design at the time, she has since retired, and Bob Boniface, who is the head of exterior design, got the team together and said, "Hey, we know we need to make a change. Let's all get together and sketch on it." And so the winning sketch, or the sketch that was chosen, was taken, and they liked it so much they made a full-size model. So we saw it in the studio, and then what that became later is the Buick Wildcat concept that we ended up seeing. What was it, like 1 or maybe 2 years ago now, I want to say? That
a couple years now, and that has really been the inspiration for everything that Buick is doing now.
Yes. So if you think of, you know, a lot of times when car companies will put forth a concept car, it is not always made to look like that when it becomes a production car, right? It's inspiration. So there are certain elements that you see. So in design, they often start with like the proportion. So long, low, wide, things like that. And then you look at the surfacing. So one thing that Buick has always been really focused on is like the sculptural surfacing. So you see that in a lot in the Wildcat. The other big change is those headlights, those very thin headlights that we're seeing a lot in design nowadays. But yes, so yesterday was the first time that we saw the entire new lineup together, which is basically inspired by that Wildcat. So the newest vehicle of the group was the Enclave, which of course is their flagship. And all SUVs, as I know you guys have talked about before here at Auto News.
We insist on calling them crossovers, right, but yes, right. They've completely abandoned the sedan so many other brands.
The death of the sedan. So you have pretty much every segment, you know, compact, midsize, big, all that. So it's really an interesting journey to go from seeing where they wanted to be several years ago to really having now this full lineup almost in production.
I don't want to jump ahead too much of the new lineup that they're about to bring out, some of which you can't talk about yet. But it's interesting that, you know, Buick is one of the brands that has an all-electric goal by 2030. So I'm sure that electrification, and not just electrification, which includes hybrids, but actually battery-powered vehicles, is a huge part of Buick's future. I wonder how that's influencing their design and design thinking, maybe more broadly.
Electrification for the industry in general has been really revolutionary for design. So as we've talked about before, I mean, many of the elements that we see on traditional ICE cars is because certain things had to go in certain places, mm-hmm. right? So we're conditioned to think that a long hood or a long dash to axle is beautiful. Well, a lot of that comes from because you just had a really big engine and you needed a place to put it, right? And then, or for example, you have a drive tunnel going through the middle of the car, and that's why there's a bump in between the seats, or mm-hmm. the big center console that sits on that bump. What BEVs have done is completely turn that on its head, because all of a sudden now you have this usually flat skateboard platform. Mm-hmm. So designers love that for a number of reasons. First of all, from exterior design, it gives you those proportions, long, low, there's a low center of gravity, wide. Mm-hmm. You can play with the proportions. You don't need a long dash to axle. You can do a short one. You don't have to have a cab forward or a cab rearward design dictated by the powertrain. But especially in the interior, that suddenly opens up so much space. You have not only storage space and leg room and all of this, but you can also play with the ergonomics and where things go. And so the industry really made this mindset shift from a design perspective of like, oh, we're all going electric now. Here's this like kind of new standard. Mm-hmm. But now, I mean, to your point, I mean, we're reading in the news.
Just today, we're recording this on April 4th, Ford announced that they're pulling back on some of their EV plans, planning to hybridize all of their gas-powered vehicles. There's been a lot of start and stop with especially GM and Ford.
And that's, I'm sure, challenging for every department in a car company, you know, the bean counters and the engineers, but in especially for design, because when designers have been working, again, remembering that we're working, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6 years out, mm-hmm. and then you're talking about advanced design groups that are even farther out with a certain expectation that a powertrain is going to be a certain way, that is a potential for a disaster. Although I don't know. I mean, this might be a little blip and maybe everybody will end up adopting a certain standard, but that is to be seen. But the other part of that too, along with electrification and the technology, is that user interface and user experience is also a really important changing part of design. Mm-hmm. And so when we hear a lot about AI and large language models and things like that, design is going to change, because you will no longer need a bunch of buttons or trackpads or touchpads or whatever when you can just tell the car to do something. And unlike some voice recognition systems of today, it actually does it and actually hears you correctly. So a lot to think about, you know, with future technology and integration into design.
How do the teams work together? It seems like you said, with the user interface, the use of screens, the changing, you know, thinking around, you know, what should be a button, what should be a knob, what can be digitized. How are companies working through that process?
So it's really interesting, because historically, the way design teams worked is, I mean, maybe the engineer would present the packaging. You know, there would be a brief. We have this package. We have this powertrain. Make it look good. And so the exterior design team would get to work on what the outside would look like, and they would give it to the interior team, and then they would give it to the color and trim people to basically decorate it, right? They were like hanging the curtains after the house was being built. Things are very different now in most design studios, not all of them, but most of them. And people are working much more collaboratively now. And that's crucial, because at the end of the day, a car is a holistic product, right? Mm-hmm. And so you even hear certain companies like Ford and Lincoln, for example, talking about, well, instead of starting with the outside, we start with the inside first. We sit in the car and we think about the user experience. But what all of this necessitates is for all the teams to be in on the plans from day one. So for example, one thing GM has been talking about a lot is the fact that they, from the design brief, all of these teams are together, because let's say you have a certain shape or a form in the interior. Maybe one of those shapes lends itself better to a certain material or a certain grain of wood. So it helps for these teams to be in together from day one and work more collaboratively instead of in these very traditional silos that they used to be in. Mm-hmm. And another part of that too, it's not just the collaboration and the communication between the departments in design, but we're also seeing a lot more collaboration and communication between design and the other departments in the company. Like, for example, again, using GM, because it's fresh in my mind, having just been there, they started this kind of, I don't want to say a test position, but they started a position originally in Cadillac, where this person who had a fine arts background understood marketing and branding. So she was like this liaison position mm-hmm. between the brand team, the marketing team, and design, in that she would make sure that everybody understood what the market was looking for and what customers wanted before the first sketch was even drawn. And that's really important, because I think there's always sort of this chicken or egg thing, right? Like, do you come up with something new and hope people will like it? Or do you take customer feedback and craft it toward that? And so this person is able to get on board early in the process to make sure that the designers are also more educated and thinking about, what do customers think about? What do they look like from a demographic standpoint, from a need standpoint, from a lifestyle standpoint? How does that translate to aesthetics, but also the user experience, the user interface? Mm-hmm. And so this is creating, again, this much more holistic process where theoretically and ideally, it means the cars will be better and they will sell more and all that good stuff. But at the end of the day, I mean, we still have other challenges that, I mean, you brought up Buick, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, Buick has a lot of challenges and
challenges in the market for how it's identified. It's still seen. I know they say that it seems like every year they have new statistics about how the younger and younger people keep buying Buicks, but it doesn't yet come across that way.
This speaks to an issue that a lot of brands have had in that your design can be amazing. You can have the most beautiful cars. You can have the most functional cars, but if perception is not on your side, then you struggle. I mean, we saw this for years with Hyundai and Kia, and I think obviously those perceptions are changing. But a brand like Buick, they know they're a challenger brand. And I think there are pros and cons to having history behind a nameplate. But from a design perspective, it's really exciting to see what they're doing. Are they going to sell? I don't know.
Laura Burstein, design journalist here visiting Detroit, visiting us here at Automotive News. Thanks so much for being here today.
Thanks, Jamie.
That's Daily Drive for today. I'm Jamie Butters.
And I'm Kellen Walker. Thanks to Automotive News coordinating producer Jake Neer, as well as our own John Irwin and George Weikamp for their reporting for today's podcast. We also had reporting from EJ Schultz of our sibling publication, Ad Age. You can get the latest news on automotive design, suppliers, and everything happening in the auto industry at autonews.com.
Come back tomorrow for my conversation with Sam Rockway, Vice President of Sales at Redcom, about the state of the dealership construction industry. We'd love to hear from you. Let us know what you think of the show and the topics we covered today. Send us an email at dailydrive@autonews.com or leave us a voicemail at 313-444-2774. And if you enjoy the podcast, remember to like, leave a review, and subscribe so you never miss an episode.